A black Jeep Cherokee pulls into the parking lot of a massive North Carolina CD factory. Inside, Del Glover clocks in for another 12-hour shift, making $11 an hour pressing compact discs. Outside these walls, he's known as A-Deg, the most prolific music pirate in history, responsible for leaking nearly 2,000 albums before their release dates. But Glover didn't invent the weapon that would nearly destroy the music industry. That honor belongs to a socially awkward German scientist whose revolutionary audio format was officially declared dead the same year it would change everything. This is the story of how three parallel lives, a brilliant engineer, a powerful music mogul, and an unassuming factory worker, converged to create the greatest media revolution of our time, transforming music from a product you owned into something that simply floated free through the digital ether. Karlheinz Brandenburg spent 8 years trying to convince anyone to care about his creation. By 1995, the MP3 had lost 7 straight standardization battles. Industry experts rejected it. Sponsors abandoned it. Brandenburg's team at Fraunhofer Institute faced watching their superior format disappear into obscurity. Brandenburg's breakthrough exploited a quirk of human biology. Your ears aren't microphones. Working from Eberhard Zwicker's psychoacoustic research, Brandenburg discovered compact discs contained massive amounts of data human ears simply ignored. His analysis by synthesis method divided audio into microscopic snippets, applying 4 principles: our preference for voice frequencies, how lower tones mask higher ones, our inability to perceive noise immediately before or after loud sounds, and processing delays. Combined with Huffman coding, Brandenburg achieved the impossible, shrinking audio files to 1/12 their original size while maintaining near-perfect quality. The irony was brutal. Brandenburg had solved digital audio's greatest challenge, yet politics favored Philips' inferior MusicM format. By late 1995, with funding evaporating, Fraunhofer prepared to retire the technology. Then Brandenburg made a desperate move. He released the MP3 encoder as free shareware, earning less than $500. This failure would accidentally plant seeds for a revolution nobody saw coming. Del Glover didn't look like someone who would topple an industry. At 21, he was a temp at the Polygram plant in Kings Mountain, making $10 an hour pressing CDs. He'd inherited his family's knack for tinkering. At 15, he bought his first computer for $2,300 by washing dishes at Shoney's. Working 70-hour weeks, Glover grossed over $1,000 weekly. Good money without a college degree, but never enough. He craved racing motorcycles, firearms, off-road vehicles, and constantly upgraded computers. Living in a trailer behind his parents' house, he repaired computers and bred pit bulls for extra cash. In 1996, Glover discovered Internet Relay Chat as ADG and found The Scene, an underground network where elite digital crews competed to release pirated material first. Downloading Tupac's California Love as an MP3 sparked his revelation. MP3s could reproduce music at 1/12 the bandwidth and distribute free online. This insight would transform him from factory worker into patient zero of music piracy, the man whose leaks would cost the industry hundreds of millions while earning nothing but scene prestige. Doug Morris, Universal Music Group's head earning $10 million annually, believed the best-selling album was, by definition, the best. He trusted market research over expertise, equating commercial success with quality. His calculated risks paid off spectacularly. A 50% stake in Jimmy Iovine's Interscope Records led to signing Death Row Records weeks after the 1992 LA riots, bringing Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, and Tupac. When moral crusaders attacked him for profiting from gangster rap, Morris weathered the storm, until Time Warner fired him in 1995. He rebounded immediately, hired by Edgar Bronfman Jr. to transform the struggling Music Cemetery of America. By 1998, Morris orchestrated Polygram Records' $10 billion purchase. The merger prospectus projected aggressive growth by extending past trends indefinitely, acknowledging traditional CD piracy but completely ignoring digital threats. Despite being drafted in November 1998 amid internet buzz, there was no mention of broadband, audio compression, file sharing, or MP3s. Morris later confessed he didn't understand the technology destroying his industry. He couldn't even use email. The mogul who built an empire predicting popular taste couldn't see the revolution under his nose. History turned on an unexpected moment in 1996 when Steve Church commissioned a listening test between MP2 and MP3. Impressed by MP3's quality, he licensed hundreds of conversion boxes for streaming audio and sold them to the National Hockey League. Fortunate timing, since Bernhard Grill had used a German hockey game as reference material. The MP3 had been accidentally calibrated to capture hockey sounds perfectly. This modest success saved the format, but didn't make it profitable. Brandenburg directed Grill to create L3 Enc, a PC application for encoding and playing MP3s, a radical vision where consumers would create their own files at home. New Pentium processors could finally handle playback without stalling. Gigabyte hard drives could store nearly 200 songs. Then everything converged. In 1997, Justin Frankel released Winamp, an unlicensed player that quickly gained 15 million downloads. That fall, the college class of 1997 arrived on campuses with high-speed internet, creating a generation-wide explosion of music piracy. When Sehan released the first consumer MP3 player in May 1998, the technological foundation for revolution was complete. Ironically, just as MP3 became officially obsolete with AAC's introduction, it became the format of the future. In late 1999, Tony Dockery revealed he'd been leaking CDs to Rabid Neurosis, RNS, an elite piracy group led by Colley. With his access ending, Dockery proposed Glover take over. Glover agreed, smuggling CDs from the plant, ripping them to MP3, and sending them to Colley. His reward? Access to vast pre-release media libraries. By 2003, Glover expanded into bootleg DVDs, becoming the movie man around Cleveland County. He built his customer base through coworkers, barbershops, and clubs, eventually setting up in a convenience store parking lot. For $5, customers bought Spider-Man weeks before Blockbuster. Then, The Fix by Scarface leaked one day after production. Universal called a plant-wide meeting, and security caught Glover's crew member smuggling a CD. Panicked, Glover quit RNS and dumped his inventory. By early 2003, he'd returned with a new deal: supply albums, but delay releases 2 weeks, protecting Glover while keeping RNS competitive. Over 4 years, Glover leaked nearly 2,000 CDs, becoming history's most successful music pirate. His only compensation? Pre-release access and respect from anonymous strangers. By 2007, RNS's dominance was absolute. Competitors had quit trying. Glover, now 33 with a newborn, worked less and attended church more. After a European top site vanished in January, Callie shut down the group. Their final leak? Fall Out Boy's Infinity on High. After 11 years and 20,000 leaks, RNS was done. Within 3 months, both returned. Their behavior had become compulsive. On September 13, 2007, after a 12-hour shift, Glover found FBI agents by his truck. At home, a SWAT team, his kicked-in door, and his tearful girlfriend holding their infant. Special Agent Peter View had hunted him for 5 years. Tony Dockery had confessed. Glover pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit copyright infringement. Yet when the FBI prosecuted Adi Kasim, believed to be Callie, a Texas jury acquitted both defendants after 5 hours, the first non-conviction in Operation Fastlink. After infiltrating the music industry's supply chain and causing millions in damages, RNS effectively beat the system. The industry adapted as consumer habits shifted. By 2011, Americans spent more on live music than recordings for the first time since the phonograph's invention. Digital sales surpassed CDs in 2012. Streaming revenues exceeded $1 billion in 2013. When the author met Glover in 2012, he had transformed. 20 pounds of muscle, regular church attendance, night school for computer science. Yet he'd sometimes check windows for surveillance. Individual choices, from Brandenburg's laboratory to Glover's CD plant to Morris's executive suite, collectively transformed how we consume creative content, forever altering the relationship between artists, industry, and audiences.